chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's the can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Hello and welcome to the 24/7 Sports College Basketball Show. I'm your host, Tani Levitt, and later I will be joined by college basketball's assist king, Jerry Meyer. We're going to talk about renewed rivalries, Jim Boeheim's interesting comments about Georgetown, and preview the heavyweight matchup on Saturday between Kansas and Villanova. But first, I want to talk about Georgetown. Over the past month, four players have transferred out of the Georgetown men's basketball program. That's a ton, especially when you consider that Georgetown is about to begin conference play. For example, four players transferred away from Cal in 2018, but all of those transfers happened after the season. Starting last Saturday at Syracuse, Georgetown will be playing the remainder of its games with just seven scholarship players. This is interesting in its own right, and Jerry and I will talk about that later, but the circumstances surrounding these four transfers deserves some attention. On December 2nd, it was revealed that Josh LeBlanc, Galen Alexander, and Myron Gardner were the subjects of two civil lawsuits, in which a female student at Georgetown accused the three basketball players of threatening her, quote, personal safety and well-being. The first of the two civil suits listed only LeBlanc and Alexander, and include burglary, threats of physical violence, and verbal threats among the accusations. The second case was mutually resolved this Monday without a decision of guilt or innocence when Gardner, Alexander, and LeBlanc agreed to stay at least 50 feet away from the students in question, but the first suit involving just LeBlanc and Alexander is still pending. All three of the players named in these civil suits have filed to transfer from Georgetown. Alexander and Gardner did so this past Friday, and LeBlanc did so on December 2nd, the same day the civil suits were made public. In light of these transfers, Coach Patrick Ewing and the entire Georgetown basketball program have come under scrutiny, and rightfully so. The reporters over at Casual Hoya pointed out that LeBlanc, Gardner, and Alexander all played fewer minutes than expected to start the season. It was only after the allegations were revealed that they left the program. Did Ewing know about these allegations and continue to play the players in question? Is that why they saw fewer minutes on the court? As some sort of internal punishment? And even if Coach Ewing and Georgetown weren't aware of the accusations before December 2nd, they certainly were after December 2nd because I was. And Ewing's actions after the allegations were made public raise even more questions. First, I told you at the top that four players transferred from Georgetown, and thus far I've only mentioned three. James Okinjo announced that he was transferring from the program on December 2nd, the same day as LeBlanc, and the same day that these allegations were made public. However, unlike LeBlanc, Okinjo was just transferring for regular reasons. Nonetheless, Ewing announced LeBlanc and Okinjo's transfers in the same announcement, either as if he was unaware of the different circumstances surrounding the two transfers, or perhaps to obfuscate the reasons of LeBlanc's transfer. Whether Ewing was unaware or obfuscating, he left much to be desired with the way he handled that announcement. Secondly, Ewing continued to play Gardner and Alexander even after the accusations were made public. Why? We don't know. What we do know is that this isn't over. There is still plenty of information yet to be released or ascertained, and we at the 24/7 Sports College Basketball Show will continue to monitor that as the season continues. But Patrick Ewing and Georgetown aren't the only ones who have failed to impress here. These three players stand accused of violent crimes. They are no longer allowed within 50 feet of one of their former classmates, and they have been allowed to enter the transfer portal and presumably continue their collegiate careers elsewhere. Why? Why does the NCAA allow athletes who stand accused of violent crimes transfer to other schools to continue their athletic careers? Does the NCAA not state that it is committed to teaching young student athletes to be leaders? Young men and women who can say they are better people because of their time at NCAA universities. How often do coaches spend their press conferences telling us that they are molders of responsible young men? Doesn't it feel like these molders of responsible young men, both the coaches and at the NCAA, are shirking their responsibility by letting their players transfer and run away from the accusations, continuing to pursue their ambitions as if their prior actions didn't exist? As if the victims of their actions don't have to try to achieve their ambitions while dealing with the fallout of something horrible that an NCAA athlete or athletes brought upon them. So I ask again, why does the NCAA allow athletes who stand accused of violent crimes transfer to other schools to enter the transfer portal? Jerry and I are going to talk about the fallout at Georgetown on the court after the break, about how they can't play at the fast pace they want to anymore because they don't have the bodies, about how Mac McClung is making a case for first team all Big East. But while we do that, we will know that there is a cloud hanging over Georgetown this season. No doubt about it. One more thing. If you or someone you know has been threatened or attacked, you can call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233. So, with no transition, I want to talk about the net rankings. Their first edition was released this past Monday, and there's what to talk about. The net replaced the RPI as the official metric of the selection committee, my characterization. But obviously, other metrics like Haslam, KenPom, Torvik, etc. will factor into the committee's selections come March, as well, of course, will the eye test. But there are some interesting tidbits that I think we should reflect on before I bring in Jerry for our conversation. Ohio State opens the net rankings number one for the second year in a row, and perhaps they're a little more deserving this year. The net rankings were released 2 weeks later than they were last year, and last year, Ohio State, nobody really had them in their top 20 of pretty much any rankings, AP or metrics or otherwise, and people were confused why they were number one. And this year, I think everyone is completely happy with Ohio State at number one, even if they did lose to Minnesota on Sunday. University of Virginia is all the way down at 43, and quite frankly, I'm pretty happy about this. I've been saying all season that their offensive struggles are more of a problem than everybody else's, and I think that that's really going to come back to bite them. And I think even though they have the number one defense in the country, the net ranking them at 43, I think is appropriate. Every undefeated team is in the top 20, including Liberty and Duquesne, who I don't think anybody is projecting to have a historic season, be undefeated, be a top five seed in the NCAA tournament. But you know what? They've earned it thus far. They are undefeated, and the net looks backwards, not forwards, so good for them. The Big Ten shines in this edition. 10 schools in the top 61 of the net. And yes, I know, for all you math heads out there, that's an arbitrary cutoff. My mom, prime among them, math teacher yelling at me. So for her, I'll say 9 Big Ten schools in the top 60, if you prefer, and then Rutgers at 61. And like I said earlier, the net is a results-based metric, so it's really cool to see Memphis at 16. We'll talk about that more later when Jerry comes on. One thing for you guys to look forward to as the season goes on and as the net updates is that the quality of victory and quality of losses will change over the course of the year as teams reveal who they truly are. For example, if Michigan loses out for the rest of the year, their victory over Gonzaga will look increasingly bad for Gonzaga, even though it looks pretty good for them, it looks pretty fine for them, I should say, right now. Meanwhile, one weird thing about NCAA basketball is that when your team finishes a game, you immediately start rooting for the team you just played to have success elsewhere. And what I mean by that is there are over 350 NCAA basketball teams, all of whom are eligible for the NCAA tournament. And obviously, we can't have a true round robin of 350 teams. That'd be, three games a day or something. So the NCAA relies on things like KenPom and like the eye test to evaluate. And one of the things that NCAA evaluators use is how good are the teams that you've beaten. This, you know, fairly reasonable. And so you have a situation where the second the clock strikes zero in a game, say, between Ohio State and Minnesota, and Ohio State now will spend the rest of the season rooting for Minnesota because Minnesota beat them, even though just recently they were, you know, playing against each other, which is a funky thing. My Maryland Terrapins are playing Seton Hall this Thursday, and it was disappointing for me to see that Seton Hall couldn't finish it out against Michigan State, couldn't finish against Rutgers, you know, couldn't finish, lost disastrously against Rutgers. And no matter what happens between Maryland and Seton Hall, it's going to look worse for Maryland because Seton Hall hasn't played well over the course of the year. And so that's something to think about when it comes to the net. I think one of the good things about the net is that it reflects this reality of college basketball quite nicely. So that's my reflections on the net and on the off-court situation in Georgetown. Obviously, we'll continue to monitor both those developing stories over the course of the season. But let's take a break. And on the backside, we'll get Jerry to talk about Memphis, Kansas, and Villanova.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Jerry, and we're back. Good to have you in the office. It was a little weird doing the solo intro without you. How you doing?
I'm doing great. getting in the Christmas spirit.
That's right. And, you know, just jumping right into it, I don't know how many college basketball games or broadcasts you've watched, because I know a lot of people these days, you know, they put the game on, but then they mute it so that they can listen to the 24/7 Sports College Basketball Show, and I get that. But if
that's
you,
a great idea.
Honestly, it really is. And if you are at home wondering, gosh, I can't stand listening to these broadcasts, what am I going to do? Jerry Meyer's beautiful voice, that's what you need to do. Listen to that while you're watching college basketball.
Listen to the words, not the voice.
Now you got a rich voice, and I like producing it. So one thing I've noticed, because I'm a fool and I've been leaving the broadcasts on, is that I heard a rumor, Jerry, that it's final season in college. Did you hear that?
I know it happens around Christmas.
Every single broadcast.
My daughter just had, she's a freshman in college. She just took some. So, yeah, I'm aware.
And it's wild because they talk about it literally every single year. And it's amazing.
Yeah, why do they talk about it so much?
I don't know. It's almost like
They actually have to do schoolwork? They're actually student athletes?
It's like the announcers.
So like, oh my gosh, they actually have to go to school and do study and be under pressure.
But I was so... You played college basketball. You know, we talk about college basketball is all-time assist king. So what was it like for you when it was games during final season? I was curious.
No big deal. Because I played, you know, at a high level in small college basketball. So we were not doing the travel. I think travel is a kind of an aspect. And I was a good student. And I loved college. I loved academics. So it wasn't an issue for me. Well, and I just enjoyed it. I was in school to go to school.
Philosophizer in chief over here.
Yeah. So anyway, I was an academic type guy. So I can't really speak to that. I think what I noticed playing, it's more, I don't think it was so much the exams, but more like not being in day-to-day class. Like your routine gets changed. Mm-hmm. And I think some players tend to get lethargic because maybe they're sleeping in a little later than they used to. They just don't have that same energy. Or you have different type energy where you're going, you're stressed and worried about an exam, and then you get that over with, and then you don't have classes to go to. Like your daily routine's different, I guess is what I'm trying to get to. And sometimes you can see that affect the team. That's why I think this time of year you don't see any really big time matchups.
No,
you know, everyone
not.
Kind of puts the brakes on a little bit.
Yeah, actually, I think it was during one of Michigan State's games in Maui. They said that Michigan State had to ship out like a sealed midterm exam for one of their players.
Yeah, it's tough. See, they're on the road, and you're in a hotel, and you know, you're out of your routine. And like, who on the road wants to be studying?
Yeah, you commandeer.
And you're in Hawaii?
Yeah, they like
you don't want to stay in the hotel room and study.
Yeah. And
or
so,
do work.
And so while I was kind of in this mindset of thinking about, you know, things that it was like for you as a player, this morning I had a brutal workout. I'm not even going to lie. And so I was thinking about it on the way to work as I was complaining. What was your workout regimen like when you were playing college basketball?
Oh, just like the daily grind?
Yeah, yeah. Well, like when you guys were in the gym, what were you doing?
Well, I mean, a lot of times we were lifting weights at like 5:30 in the morning.
5:30 is very early.
A lot of time we did, you know, I can't remember exactly what time, but it was really early. And
could you still do that now?
Lift weights at 5:30 in the morning?
Yes, sir.
How heavy are the weights?
As heavy as you need.
I can get up then and do whatever. I'm going to do it like a 50-year-old man who doesn't give a rip anymore and doesn't exercise and has arthritis. But, I am not the same person I was in college. That's the question.
I'm sure you can still dunk.
I could never dunk, Tony. Imagine I'm like a lesser Steve Nash.
a lesser
but,
Steve
Nash. Yeah, so you're weightlifting before class, breakfast, go to school, practice, do school work, do study work, you know,
do
whatever you got to do study-wise.
And so,
you know,
like,
as you're lifting and you're playing, you know, you're practicing or playing a game. I mean, that's basically the routine for all these teams.
And you played here locally at Lipscomb, right?
Yeah, 3 years there, then a year at University of Minnesota Duluth.
That's right. And so when you were at Lipscomb, who were your biggest rivals?
Belmont.
And so I asked that because this past week we had a couple rivalries rekindled.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about Memphis and Tennessee, and later we're going to talk about Syracuse and Georgetown. And so for you as a player, like what were those rivalry games like?
Oh, I mean, there's nothing like the Belmont game. I played in the very first Battle of the Boulevard. We sold out Vanderbilt's gym. So there's like 15,000 people there. And scalping tickets for $100. That's the word on the street.
No.
Because
whoa.
We were both unbelievably talented, good teams. Like, I would say, like, out of the starting five, seven played professionally. I could have, but didn't because my body was broke down. I mean, I just didn't want to go through the European grind. I was just kind of done by the time I graduated. But, I mean, it was the highest level of, you know, it would equate to, like, good, kind of like Lipscomb and Belmont on their good years now. I mean, so it's
yeah,
a great talented game.
Two good teams.
No, I had 16 points, a bunch of assists.
Not bad.
Maybe one of my more stylistic passes of my career. A nice behind the back for a dunk.
Of course you remember. Let's go. So Memphis, Tennessee rekindle their rivalry. Obviously, we have the back and forth between the coaches, whether or not we'll continue. But it's really exciting to see these things, these rivalry games continue.
I think it's exciting for the players and the fans.
It's good to have
the coaches
these local
don't
things.
Really care, I don't think. Probably more. The coaches probably don't like it as much, and I don't think Memphis and Tennessee are going to keep playing, are they?
I heard.
That's unfortunate.
After the game, it seemed like the coaches were a little more.
Oh, did they talk openly? I did not.
Yeah,
hear
yeah.
That
Penny
talk.
Penny apologized. He said, "I spoke a little too aggressively."
Yeah,
basically.
That was a little weird last year. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the other rivalries that rekindled this year, Syracuse and Georgetown, who obviously haven't been playing since. Syracuse left the Big East,
right?
And that's a
that's
story.
A classic.
Rivalry.
I mean, for me, I'm 50 years old, so I grew up. I remember when the Big East started playing on cable. You know, I don't know what they call it, like Big East Monday or something like that. And that was huge. And that, in my mind, that's an epic rivalry. Syracuse Georgetown. The history is amazing, and those two teams did a whole lot to as sort of like catalysts. To promote and get college basketball on the big TV stage. You know, Dick Vitale had a lot to do with that as well. And but those two teams, yeah, that rivalry. You got, like, North Carolina Duke and then kind of Syracuse Georgetown. Like, those were such huge games when
yeah.
I was growing up.
Unfortunately, this was a Syracuse Georgetown game to remember ended 51-47.
Well, and it didn't look like the Georgetown-Syracuse games. That I remember from the past, you know, not as athletic, not as long, and teams depleted, not as good. It did not look like what I remembered.
No, but I did see that you were watching tape from that game yesterday. You really liked what you saw from Dolezal on Syracuse.
Well, I like that he's so skinny, but yet he scored through contact. It was just a random observation. But maybe it's kind of a throwback style in that he had the ability to go up through contact and then wait on the release. And that's how I was taught to play. You absorb contact, you know, then you try to shoot with touch. And he does a great job of using the glass, kind of old school, you know, gave him a little play. Now, I don't know that he does that night in, night out, but I was very impressed in that Georgetown game with, you know, how he converted buckets inside.
Perhaps the only thing worth taking away for Syracuse, but after the game, we had some very interesting comments from Syracuse coach Jim Boeheim. Obviously, for those of you guys at home listening, you already heard in the intro, four players have left Georgetown's program in the past month. All four transferred away. Three are involved in a civil suit involving some other students on campus. We already got into that. But from an on-court perspective, Georgetown is winning games with seven scholarship players. Now, they have a couple guys who it looks like they have scholarships, but were originally walk-ons. So basically what we're saying is that they have seven guys who they were actively recruiting and are running out. And then, after the game, Coach Jim Boeheim says, and I'm going to read this quote so I get it right, "I think their last three games is the team they are. They got rid of a guy that wouldn't pass the ball to anybody and just shot it every time. That's why they're good now." Jerry, yeah. If you were a player on Georgetown, if you were this player, how would you react to an opposing coach saying this? Because
you wouldn't like it.
Yeah, I mean, like, I was always under the impression...
It's kind of obvious.
Like, I was under the impression that, like, there's like, a rule among coaches, like, you coach your guys.
Well, it's very unusual. We can talk about that. Yeah. And, of course, Akingo's, right? Who's it about?
Akinjo, yeah.
Of course he doesn't like it. And he probably doesn't give a rip either. He's got a lot on his plate, more than whatever Jim Boeheim in his curmudgeon self wants to say. But you rarely hear that. Like, I'm surprised to hear that. Coming from Boeheim, I'm not that surprised. He's a kind of a surly. And I think he's at a place in his career he'll say whatever he thinks. But that is unusual. Yeah, usually you don't make negative comments about other teams' players, but he's not on their team anymore. And I think he was just being brutally honest. And just, I don't think Boeheim cares.
And if you were Patrick Ewing, how would you react to that? You know, like someone saying that?
I'd be like, whatever.
Yeah, you like.
I mean, he doesn't play for him anymore.
Yeah, but he's still taking shots at the program. You know, Ewing.
What shot did he take?
Like that.
Oh, that you're a bad coach because you were playing a guy you shouldn't have played.
This is a person you brought into your program.
If he thought it through that deeply,
I don't know.
That's why it's very unusual.
It's just bizarre.
I mean, like, name another instance where a coach has talked like that. It would probably be tough. I mean, it's not like we're keeping a chart, so you probably don't know.
No,
but it's out of the ordinary. Very out of the ordinary. I mean, Boeheim, when he loses and when he's not feeling good, you know, he'll say some things, and that's what he did there.
Yeah, so looking at Georgetown now, just from a rest of the season perspective, they are in an interesting moment because, you know what, the Syracuse win, that was their third in a row. Last night, they go and cruise against UMBC, and I don't know, maybe UMBC was distracted because they appointed a new athletic director yesterday. I don't know.
That does not distract.
I'm joking.
Good. I'm glad that was a joke.
it was a very not serious joke, but
okay,
yeah, Georgetown goes up 14-0, cruises the rest of the game, but they are an interesting team because they, until yesterday, or as of I say, should say yesterday before the game, they were playing the 34th fastest pace in the country, and now they're down to seven guys. That's not sustainable, is it?
Oh, I mean, you can play fast with seven guys.
Yeah,
they just have to be healthy.
Well, so here's the other thing. Two of those guys are like big lumbering centers. They got a 6'11 guy and a 7'2 guy. Like, that just seems to me like it's unsustainable.
He was getting down the court.
He looked really, really good last night. I think he led the team in scoring, maybe had 22.
Depth's overrated. I think depth overrated in the sense that the games aren't that hard. I mean, you get how many TV timeouts? You get four TV timeouts a half. That's a lot of timeouts. That's eight in a game.
Yeah, but
plus
it just
other timeouts. I mean, are they pressing defensively? I don't remember watching them press.
No, I don't think so.
So just because you run fast down the court on offense, golly gee. I mean, you know, I think seven's enough. If you got seven guys that can play, you know, as far as playing fast and having a bunch of players, I think that's why they're playing better now, because most players want to be in a seven-man rotation. They don't want to play in a nine-man rotation. It's not like the guys on the bench who weren't getting as many minutes can't play. Obviously, they can. That's what we're seeing now. Often, there is addition by subtraction. I know I grew up with my dad, who was a coach, always saying, I've never seen a team get worse after a player quit. Now, I know this is like a weird circumstance, and they're not necessarily quitting. You know, we have legal issues and whatnot. But that's an energy that's negative on a team. So a lot of times when you release negative energy, for whatever reason it is negative, and I'm not saying these kids are negative people. You follow what I'm saying? But the energy for the team is not so positive. And there can be a breath of fresh air, an opening, and guys get an opportunity. And
well, they seem
a lot of these guys are good basketball players, and Coach Ewing can coach. So I'm not shocked that they're doing well. Plus, Syracuse is not the Syracuse that I'm used to seeing. So we'll see how it goes. You know,
well, they had even before Syracuse, they had two very interesting games. They played at Oklahoma State, at SMU, yeah, won both those games. And
they beat NC State too, or am I off on that?
That wasn't them, I don't think.
No, another team. Okay, anyway, keep going.
But the one guy who's really stepped up in all these players' absences is Mac McClung.
Yeah.
And McClung is an interesting character. You know, he had just 8 points last night, but you know, once the Hoyas were up 14-0, they kind of just dropped it into second gear. But he did, for what it's worth, have a SportsCenter top 10 dunk last night, which is no surprise because Mac McClung, as everybody knows, famous from his high school mixtapes, that guy can jump out the ceiling, any building, dunk the hell out of the ball.
Yeah, great 2-foot jumper.
Yeah. But he's putting up 33 points at Oklahoma State, 19 at SMU, 26 at Syracuse, and he's leading this Hoya team. And so I was curious to ask you, when you saw him in high school, what were you seeing out of Mac McClung, and what are you seeing out of him now? You know, I know you think that he's in a really good situation on this Georgetown program.
Oh, sure. Because they need him to score. And he's going to get a lot of minutes. What I like about McClung, and I'm not saying I had a total grasp on this when I watched him in high school, but I feel very confidently about this now, and I think it's kind of undisputable. He's tough. He's a clutch player. He's not scared. He's willing to take that shot. That's the huge thing. I mean, there's a lot of guys that can shoot as good as McClung. Maybe not a lot, but, you know, there's a couple on every team, right, who could be like a 40% three-point shooter. But are they willing, you know, are they tough enough mentally and physically? Do they crave the challenge? Do they want to take that tough shot? He likes to do that. So when I watched him in high school, when he played and you scouted him, you didn't – like, there were a lot of games he didn't get a dunk. Okay. What the mixtape guys did a great job of, the dunks that he did get that were spectacular, you know, they got him on tape because they're following the guy around. So you didn't think, I mean, and again, the dunk is 2 points. So from a scouting perspective, you're like, that's, wow, it's great. Plus, he's a 2-foot jumper. And for a guard, you know, I would prefer a 1-foot jumper. But you saw a guy who didn't shy away from the action. Seemed to be a very aware player. He played with awareness. He was engaged. You know, looking to be in the right spot.
A lot of the dunks came off of back cuts.
Yeah,
which is no surprise.
Right, he knows how to cut. He tries to be in the right place on defense. You saw that. Limited as a ball handler. You know, and that's why he went ranked high, because he's not a point guard, and at that size, that's tough. And he's very right-handed as far as driving the ball. But he will make a shot. And, man, if you have the right team around you, if you're in that spot, you're the, quote, shooter for a team. You got other guys who can handle the ball. He doesn't turn the ball over much. He doesn't give you a lot of assists, but he's conservative with his ball handling. But he has the toughness, the kahunas, can I say that?
Yeah, yeah,
to
absolutely.
Take the big shot and to – he doesn't shy away from the pressure, and he can shoot. And so all he's got to do is shot fake one dribble right. And take a shot or kick it out. you know, you don't have to be great at everything to be a valuable player for a team, and he's got a perfect niche right now at Georgetown.
Yeah, I mean, there's no surprise. You know, coming out of high school, it was 245 in the 24/7 Sports composite. Mm-hmm. But you know what? At 245, this is a guy who broke Allen Iverson's high school record for scoring in Virginia. And this is a guy who all of a sudden quietly is shooting 42% from three on the year, 93% from the free throw line. And you know what? He was one shot shy of 50% from three since these guys transferred away from the program. And I don't think we can understate that. That he sees a void to be filled, and he's stepping up.
He's that type of guy. He has the mentality you want. The other thing I like about him, for a guy who got such notoriety for his dunking, he doesn't play and act like he's that guy. You know, he's a serious basketball player, just trying to grind out and make the grinded out common plays and make them uncommonly well for his team. And a lot of guys like him, you see him out there, all they're doing is just trying to get that next dunk. And he does not play like that.
No, I mean, he like I said, last night he was pretty uninvolved, but he had a really, really nice assist. Drove the lane, drew two, dropped it to the big. Really good stuff from McClung. So here's a really hot take for you, Jerry. I don't think you're ready for this. We've got James Wiseman.
Let's see. I'm like the Mac McClung of podcasters. So I see a void.
We've got James Wiseman out for an extended period of time. We've got Cole Anthony now missing 4 to 6 weeks, had surgery on his knee. Mm-hmm. We've got an underwhelming freshman class for the most part. Anthony Edwards is, you know, aside from that game in Maui, not necessarily playing like the number one draft pick. And we've got, say, Obi Toppin is not televised so much in Dayton. Georgetown, nearly every single game is on FS1 or Fox, okay? Mac McClung is the guy everyone should be watching, who could do something cool every night. This team needs it. He's got the ability. He could explode for a dunk. He could go off for 4 or 5 threes. He's the guy I think people should watch just when you're looking for an exciting college basketball player to watch this year, because he's filling that void. Mm-hmm. That's my take.
Yeah. He's a good choice.
I thought you were going to blow up at me. Absolutely not. He doesn't have the pedigree. No.
Well, I don't care about pedigree. I mean, we're talking about entertainment, right?
Yeah.
People watching a basketball game. I might not watch for the same reasons, but he would be a good one to watch, sure.
All right, let's do it. So for those of you at home who are muting the TV to listen to the 24/7 Sports College Basketball Show, turn the TV to FS1, check out Georgetown Hoyas, because Mac McClung might do something special. All right, so the last thing we usually like to do is talk about, you know, a couple games from the upcoming slate of games this week, and this week we've got an interesting one. We've talked about Kansas a number of times on the pod, but you know, they're really good and deserve the attention. And they've got a very interesting matchup on Saturday. They're now the fifth number one team in the AP poll in just 7 weeks, and they're traveling to Philadelphia to play Villanova at home. And so, you know, when we talk about when we discuss what we want to talk about today, I said I wanted to talk about this because this is a unique challenge for Kansas's big men. You know, in McCormick and Azubuike, they've got probably two of the most skilled big men, you know, in the country. And the two of them, they play a ton. Like, only 7% of Kansas's possessions are both of them not on the floor. So they're always playing.
One or the other's on the floor, right?
Yeah, and then 30.
What's the percentage when they're both on together?
Like 30.
Is that high?
No. It's 17.5%. So, like, they play, like, almost a fifth of the game together. And
because it's tough.
Yeah.
And it's going to really be tough against Villanova to play both of them.
Because Villanova doesn't have a single player on their roster taller than 6'9", and their big men are really skilled. They know how to stretch it. They know how to stretch it to the three-point line. They're really good passers. They're willing passers. And so, Jerry, how do you imagine this matchup of really big, burly big men for Kansas and skilled, maybe more perimeter-oriented big men for Villanova?
Well, it's obviously a contrast, as you've laid out. You know, I'm not ready to predict who is going to win. Do you know the point spread on that game, though, by the way?
No, but I can look it up while you talk.
Oh, that'd be awesome. But I know I would rather be on the side that has the shorter, quicker, more skilled big men. I think when you look at team defense, and both Villanova and Kansas play great team defense and, you know, take pride in their defense, are very well coached, it's a lot easier to help out on the interior because, you know, you can do things like front the post, pressure the ball, you know, help out on the weak side, bring guys to cover down. You know, we saw what Duke did to Kansas, double teaming the post with the bigs. Mm-hmm. It's a lot. It's what are you going to do when Sadiq Bey has the ball at the top of the key, mm-hmm. and McCormick's guarding him? It's a lot harder to help out as far as team defense goes, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to go just trap him right there at the top of the key. He has a three-point shot possibility if played off. He can drive the lane. Of course, you can try to help once he puts it on the floor. But you get my point. I think it's Absolutely. A lot harder to game plan. I would rather have the advantage with guys that have perimeter skills who are my 5 and 4 men
yeah.
than the opposite. And Villanova's used to playing – undersized.
Yeah, I mean, they
run a swarming man-to-man defense with ball pressure, and they're willing to front the post. They're bringing help. You know, they scheme it. I think the job is going to be way tougher for Kansas. Now, they might get it done. You know, I'm not saying those guys can't guard them, but it is a challenge, and I think it's a very compelling dichotomy of styles and abilities.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just checked the Vegas line isn't released yet, but Ken Pom has Kansas as a 1-point favorite. So really, really, you know, we expect this to be a very good game.
Toss up.
And
that's how I view it. Mm-hmm. Toss up. Is it at Villanova?
Yeah, it's at Villanova.
So I would. Yeah,
must
if I was
watch.
Wagering, I would be on Villanova.
Must watch TV this Saturday. And the crazy thing is, in conclusion, it's not just Sadiq Bey. So if McCormick or Azubuki, whoever it is out on pretty much any of the Villanova big men, every single one of them shoots at least 35% from three. Yeah. And that's respectable. You know, like that's not just respectable.
Sadiq Bey is like
44.
Yeah. I mean, that's a real tough matchup. And that guy can put it on the floor. Both guys are really good. I love Robinson Earl when I scouted him, mm-hmm. and he's shown what I thought he had. That guy can play. It's going to be a compelling matchup.
And they've shown Villanova that they will come to play in a big game. You know, especially we've already talked about their game with Baylor. We were both just enamored with the passing in that game. We can expect the same kind of stuff this upcoming Saturday.
Right, and what you got to be careful of when you look at games and try to predict or see you prognosticate on it, analyze it. Prior to one, Kansas big guys might get the better of the Villanova big guys.
It's tough to know, right?
I know which side I'd rather be on as far as that matchup, but that's just one aspect of the game. And a lot of times analysts like focus too much because Villanova could get the better of them, say, in this matchup. But maybe Villanova's guards can't guard Kansas's guards. You know, so as far as who wins the game.
Or like, couldn't you imagine a situation where the Kansas big men, like, all of a sudden you look up and they've got 25 boards together, and like Villanova's just locked off the boards.
I doubt it, but something like that could happen.
It could happen, yeah.
Right. You never know how guys are going to play on that particular day, but it's a great contrast to think about and talk about like we're doing.
It really is, and. You know, from a content perspective, if Kansas loses, it would probably mean a sixth number one team in 8 weeks, which is just unheard of. I'm sure by the end of the season, we're going to look up and we're going to say, oh, well, this team was good all along. But right now, it just really feels like this season is wide open. And that's why you need to tune into the 24/7 Sports College Basketball Show to find out, to make sense of what's going on, to have something to listen to when you mute the broadcast. And so thank you so much, Jerry, for coming in this week.
Yeah.
Looking forward to talking to you next week. I'm sure we'll have a new number one because that's what the season has been gifting us. If you like what you hear, it would be really great if you could subscribe, give us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Be sure to follow Jerry on Twitter at JerryMeyer247. And until next week, this is 24/7 Sports College Basketball Show signing off.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.